Bob Stauffer joining us on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Bob, how you doing today?
Good, AJ. How's it going?
Outstanding. Just love talking hockey, love talking sports at this time of year, and knew we'd be able to talk a lot of different things. So what's going on in Edmonton right now? You got the World Juniors. I'm curious, like, what is the what's the appetite for the World Juniors? I mean, I feel for my hometown city because this event is basically being played for the third time.
Yeah.
It didn't happen, and then it did happen, and all of a sudden it got canceled, and then it got pushed back to August, and then you had the Hockey Canada scandal. What's the appetite for this tournament right now in Edmonton in the middle of August?
Well, I'll be honest with you, it's tepid at best in terms of sort of the level of interest that's out there. I mean, it's just been a tough situation. Like, I think back to the World Juniors a couple of years ago, and there were no fans allowed in the building. And I did go to several of, in fact, I went to all of Team Canada's games because it predated the start of the North Division bubble that we had for the NHL. And there weren't even, at that point, there were no bars open or restaurants open, and I guess you could order takeout, but that was sort of the extent of what you could do at that stage. So, the U.S. ended up winning 2-0 with a real good Canadian team that year, and then we got started this year. We were supposed to be on the road, obviously, with the Oilers during the course of the season, and got shut down after 2 days in Edmonton. So then they go to play the tournament in the summer, which is never the best time. Now, that said, the Holinka Gretzky was supposed to be here every second year as well. They moved the Holinka Gretzky to Red Deer. I'd say, look, it would be a tough sell. You've lived here, AJ. August tends to be a pretty nice – August and September are pretty nice in Edmonton relative to some of the other more bitter times of the year. So it's a tough sell at the best of times, and then you have all the stuff with Hockey Canada. I feel terrible for the kids. I feel terrible for the people that have been, like Terry O'Flynn out of Edmonton here, that have, taken this thing on over the last couple of years. It's just been an incredible sequence and confluence of events that have undermined, giving Edmonton sort of the experience that they deserve with the World Juniors, because it is a spectacular tournament that's broadcast very well by TSN. And unfortunately, Xavier Bourgault, who's the Oilers' first rounder, he was in the Memorial Cup, so he's not playing. At one time, they were going to have Dylan Gunther and Jake Neighbors, who were part of the Edmonton Oil Kings, and Kate Gooley, but traded to Edmonton. None of those guys are with the World Junior Team. Kosa is there. He struggled a bit last night. So they had four members of the Edmonton Oil Kings that were supposed to play on the team as well. Actually, five, as it turned out, because they ended up getting Justin sort of in a trade. And so it just hasn't worked out well. So very muted sort of interest out there. Part of it obviously has to do with some of the ongoing investigations with Hockey Canada, which frankly have very little to do with the current roster players, including a couple Ottawa Senator prospects.
Yeah, how big is that cloud, or does it feel in terms of the excitement level or maybe lack thereof? We're watching the game now in the studio, and you could pretty much count the fans that are taking part in the Czechs and the Slovaks. Obviously going to be bigger numbers for Canada, but how big of a cloud is that, the Hockey Canada stuff, in terms of the feeling around the tournament right now?
Well, Graham, it's interesting because I can remember with the Holinka Gretzky, what they did is they had a whole bunch of conferences around that. So like Mike Babcock at that time was coaching the Maple Leafs. He came into town and spoke at one of the coaches' clinics with Todd McClellan. So I'm going to guess that this would have been, I'm thinking off the top of my head, well, it was Broberg. So would have been summer of 2018. So there were actual fans for the non-Canada games at the Holinka Gretzky tournament. That's not the World Juniors. That's the, the preamble to it, the U18 tournament. So, I think they'll end up having anywhere from 25,000 to 5,000 fans per game for Team Canada. But again, there's so much that's got on here that, it's just the sponsors have shied away. I mean, TSN's going to broadcast those games. They've got to provide a pool feed as well, obviously, and make the best of every situation. And for me, I just feel bad for the kids and bad for the tournament organizers and, bad for the coaches and those, the support people around the event that had absolutely nothing to do with some of the transgressions that have occurred in the past.
So let's go down memory lane. It's a painful memory. I was 13 when it happened. I remember exactly where I was, driving down Sir Winston Churchill Avenue in St. Albert with my mom, and the news came across the radio that Wayne Gretzky had been traded in 1988 to the Los Angeles Kings. What do you remember about that day? I know you had Wayne Gretzky on your show today, but you know, one of the most transformational days in the history of Canadian sport.
Yeah, AJ, we did a 25th anniversary show back in 2013 and had Peter Pocklington, Bruce McNall, Glenn Sather on the show. And I remember Slats just, and one thing I always admired about Glenn is he never lied to you. Sometimes you meet executives in professional sport and they'll look, they could be the nicest guys in the world and they'll lie right to your face. And Glenn would never do that. And he sometimes, you know, might tell a undisciplined kid that was in pretty good shape when he was in his 20s, you know, you're not going to have that body if you keep living the way you live, going back a few years. But anyway, I remember him saying to me, "Stop. It was a sale. It wasn't a trade." So, yeah, we had Wayne on today. I was in the reforestation industry at that time. As you know, I had a lengthy career doing that. We were up near Grand Prairie, which, for your listeners that are unfamiliar, is about 4.5 hours north of Edmonton. It was about 30 degrees Celsius, and we're baking in the sun. And we heard on 630 Chet, because that's the only radio station we could get up, that Wayne had been traded. And I remember just being in shock. And I certainly didn't think that two years later the Oilers would win the Cup again. Now, as it's turned out, Wayne, as you know, ended up being part of the Oilers entertainment group. He was a vice chair. He traveled with us a lot, 16, 17, 17, 18, 18, 19, the start of the 1920 season before the pandemic hit. I saw Wayne during the Colorado series. He's probably been on our show 30 times over the course of the last 4 years, and was kind enough to give us some time today. It's flabbergasting when you think about how it completely, you know, resulted in a paradigm shift for the National Hockey League and grew the expansion to the Sun Belt in the U.S. Like, I mean, there's no way to underscore the importance of what occurred. It was shocking. It was upsetting. You used the word transformative. You know, there was a neurosis with Oilers fans after that. You know, Wayne, actually, you can even, you know, Paul Coffey, it wasn't strictly money as to why Paul was traded. Then Wayne got traded. Then Mark Messier got sold as well as Wayne. And then the Oilers, even during the days of the Edmonton Investors Group, after Peter Pocklington was gone, you know, Cal Nichols was chairman of the board. His son was in my wedding party, so we've had lots of conversations about this over the years. And it was really interesting that when they had the team, you know, we didn't have a salary cap, so the Oilers were forced to trade Doug Weight and Bill Guerin. And that's why it was so different in the summer of 2017 when the Oilers signed Drysdale and McDavid each to max term length deals and 8-year deals. You know, those guys, now a lot of people thought the Edmonton overpaid at Drysdale. History has proven that not to be the case. But it was, you know, and AJ, I can tell you, Wayne Gretzky was coaching the Phoenix Coyotes when Daryl Cates was pursuing the Oilers. You were doing the Oil Kings play-by-play. I remember Wayne coming on the show, and I asked him point blank, "Oilers fans are concerned about single-man ownership because of what happened under Peter Pocklington." And he assured the fans, he said, if Daryl Cates got the team, he would sign their star players to max term length deals. He did that with, you know, Taylor Hall, Jordan Eberle, and, Taylor Hall and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins got 7-year deals. Eberle got a 6-year deal. The Oilers re-upped Nugent-Hopkins again, and they did it with McDavid, Drysdale, and Darnell Nurse as well. So, you know, I think we're at a completely different place now, but it certainly left a scar on a lot of Oilers fans' hearts.
You know, you guys have this conversation every year, and you talk to Wayne so often. Have you noticed, like, when you're speaking with him today, how does he reflect on it now, so many years later?
You know, it's an interesting question. To be honest with you, we switched. He was golfing with Sean Payton, You know, former New Orleans, the former Ottawa Rough Riders as well. He was with the Riders back in the when Ryan Kettle had been coaching the team in '87. You guys recall at that time, or was he had moved on by that point?
It's right in the midst of one of the worst stretches in Ottawa football, 87, 88, and 89. You know how I know that is they had lost 19 of 20 home games, and right now we're going through something similar. So if it was 87 when he was here, I'd have to look it up, and I'll do that quickly. Then he was part of a really bad football team.
Because for your listeners that are unaware, George Brancato's daughter married Pete Chiarelli, who's the Oilers' former GM, who signed both Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl 8-year deal. So, yeah, Wayne was with Sean. He was golfing today when he did the show. So, you know, I think in Wayne's mind, Graham, he's kind of moved on a little bit. Like, it's, in fairness, it was 34 years ago. You know, I didn't know he had a golf game today. I was surprised he agreed to do the show. So, I think he certainly recognizes how important it was to the National Hockey League. He also points out that Edmonton went on to win the Stanley Cup. And, you know, I think Wayne thinks Edmonton's got a pretty good squad this year, and the salary cap's part of the reason why Canadian teams, like, you know, I remember when Cal Nichols had the Oilers, 2000 to 2004, and there was the Canadian Assistance Program for Edmonton, Calgary, and Ottawa. And some of the Hawks owners, when I mean Hawks, I don't mean the Blackhawks, though their owners might have been one of them as well, but I mean the more aggressive American-based ownership groups were quite specific with Edmonton and Calgary not outbidding them on free agents. And I find that ironic given what we go through now in a cap system with revenue sharing. But some of those owners complained about coughing up $3 million a year to help keep Edmonton, Calgary, and Ottawa afloat, because that pales in comparison to the total that organizations like Arizona have pulled out of revenue sharing the last decade plus. Like, you know, it's an infinite more amount each year. So we're in a different place right now. I think Wayne loves where the league's at. The fact that Canadian teams, in theory, should be able to compete because we have a salary cap in place. And I think that's his greater focus. Like, he knows he helped grow the game in the States. I know you guys have been around and seen some of the other markets. Not everybody's Arizona. Tampa Bay's a great market. The LA Kings, that's a great hockey market as well. Dallas is a pretty vibrant hockey market. And there's been a proliferation of kids come out of those markets, specifically in Texas and in California and even in Arizona, obviously, with Austin Matthews that have been very impactful NHL players.
By the way, Fred Glick was the coach of the 87 Ottawa Rough Riders, so... Yeah, dark days indeed in Ottawa football as we continue with Bob Stauffer. And Bob, just when it comes to that, I mean, we saw Calgary go through it this offseason, and when you saw what they went through, and in the end they ended up making what looks like a great deal, especially when you look at the extension for Jonathan Huberdeau with Mackenzie Weegar, a first-rounder, and a prospect as well. With Tkachuk going the other way, they lost Johnny Gaudreau. Ottawa's been through that before. Edmonton's been through that before. Do they need to change something, especially with the taxes, when so much revenue, 35 to 40% of revenue in the league is generated up here? I mean, at some point, you know, we'll be going on 30 years this year without a Canadian team having won the Stanley Cup. At some point, that's just not a fluke.
Yeah, a couple things. I mean, just in terms of the, you know, no state tax in states like Florida and Texas and Tennessee and Nevada, unquestionably, some agents will tell you it's not as big a deal. Others will tell you, no, it's good. I mean, the Tampa Bay Lightning got Steven Stamkos at a reduced rate. I do think it's harder to win in Canada. I think hockey matters more in Canada. I think there's way more pressure in Canada. I think in the Canadian markets, the NHL team is the number one team in town, and there's no debate. And, I had this conversation with Pete Chiarelli when he came from Boston. You know, I worked in a big market, and I'm like, it's not the same. Ken Holland came from Detroit. Like, in Boston, you got the Patriots, you got the Red Sox, and you got the Celtics. Like, with all due respect to the Bruins, there's times they might be two or three, but they're never number one there. In Detroit, okay, the Red Wings were probably number one because the Lions have been terrible since, I don't know, Bobby Lane.
Yeah.
They've been god awful for 50 years. And made Barry Sanders and Billy Sims retire early. You know, and so I do think it's way more challenging. I think that those organizations have to do a better job drafting and development. I mean, in Ottawa's case, there always seemed to be a sort of a soap opera thing going on with some of the players. But the one thing the Sens fans should, and maybe, you know, and I know there's some questions on the Boucher pick, But Ottawa's drafted pretty well, and they've found players. And I think fans there should be pretty excited with where Pierre Dorion's going to go. Why he didn't call me to be their next assistant general manager, I'm not sure. I'll have to talk to Pierre about that. But with all seriousness, you know, I think you got to draft and develop well. And Edmonton, AJ, they're the only team in the league that's had a first-round pick in the last 10 years that has those picks all still with their organization, which is a little bit surprising because the Oilers have had three GMs. So do they need to balance out the tax? Yes. The team that gets screwed the most, the Montreal Canadiens. Quebec's got the highest taxes of any province in Canada that's got an NHL team. And, you know, it makes it more challenging, I think, in Montreal. They made it to the Stanley Cup final a year ago. So, you know, Edmonton got there in 06, Calgary got there in 04, the Sens got there in 07, and the Canadiens got there last year, and hopefully the Leafs don't get there for another 30 years.
What are the expectations from Oilers fans on their team with bringing in Jack Campbell and able to bring back Evander Kane and build off the run that we saw this last postseason? Are you expecting, or is everyone expecting them to continue to take more strides, or just maybe Colorado a little bit too tough to get by right now?
Well, I'm going to throw it back. What do you two guys think?
I think they're one of the top teams in the West. I think Colorado's still the best team in the West, but I think they're in that next tier of, like, I think they're closer to competing for a Stanley Cup.
Okay. Graham?
Yeah, I think they're in that next tier beyond Colorado. But I would just love to see McDavid go on another run. I think I don't have any rooting interest for the Oilers whatsoever, but love seeing him win some playoff games. And I think it's big time important. So I'd love to see him go on a run, but I don't think they're in the same tier as Colorado quite yet. But they're definitely in that next group.
And yeah. My next question is, I kind of feel like when Borgo, and I don't know how, I mean, it's a lot to ask somebody that was just drafted a year ago to all of a sudden contribute, but I feel like when Broberg and Borgo and Holloway and some of those guys, maybe a Savoy, yep, are ready to contribute, especially on entry-level deals, that'll be their time where they need to break the door down. Is that fair?
Yeah. Here's what I'd say. If Kadri doesn't, and you know, I've known Chris McFarland pretty well, AJ. You know, Scott Housen, I've had a relationship with Scott for 22 years now. And, you know, Columbus was an interesting place in 2008 and 2009. And I think Chris McFarland did a lot more work in Colorado than people realize. I'd never underestimate their ability to get things done, since he was the one that warned me the Oilers were going to take the step back during the 16-17 season. He said, if you guys, you know, you're getting too heavy stuff as a team, and it might come back and bite you. And it did in 17, 18, 18, 19. And he said, we're going to transition to, you know, we're going to place emphasis on, you know, speed and skill, and that's what we're going to go with. And that's what they did. So now, all that said, if Colorado doesn't get Kadri back, I do think Edmonton's closed the gap a bit. The Oilers, to their, you know, their best defenseman and their second best player were significantly undermined with injury during the course last year. Now, maybe they lose in five, maybe they lose in six, but I don't think they get swept if Draisaitl was centering his own line and Darnell Nurse was at 100%. I mean, they basically lost 3 one-goal games in the series. Colorado's still better. They're the best team in the league. I'll grant you that. But they have had some significant, you know, a couple of significant losses, and Kadri would be a big one for them. So my expectation is Edmonton's been 12th, 11th, and 11th over the last 3 years. Them and Minnesota are the only teams last year in the top 12 in the league that have got their last four number one picks. The Oilers do have some big, rangy, more physical support defensemen coming that are prospects to go along with those first rounders. They should be a top eight team in the league. And last year, because of how bad the back half of the Eastern Conference was, it was a really odd year, right? You had eight teams in the East over 100 points. I don't think you'll see that happen again this year. So I think you could see Edmonton, you know, legitimately be a top eight team. I think they should have been a top eight team last year, but they had a terrible stretch where they went 2-11-2 over 15 games, but got, you know, Dave Tippett in the position where he was ultimately fired. I don't think they'll have that sort of negative run, and I do think Campbell's an upgraded goal.
All right, I got three more for you.
Three?
I know. We've kept you a long time.
It's all good. Go for it.
Ottawa Senators. What do you make of this roster? I mean, a lot of people here, and I think rightfully so, want to see another top four defenseman brought in. They've certainly tried, and I'm sure they'll continue to try to pry loose. You know, if Uyghur can't sign long-term in Calgary, well, you know, maybe they can find a way to get Chychrun, or maybe they just give opportunities from within and see if a guy like Bernard Docker or Lassie Thompson is ready. But what do you make of this Senators roster? Are they ready with the moves that they made in goal? You'd know Cam Talbot as well as anybody. Is this team ready to finally push for a playoff spot and turn the corner?
Well, the first thing I can tell you is Cam Talbot, and I, you know, I always, you know, AJ, I've been this way for, I always sort of cringe when guys give me the media guys sit there and say they know the room, or they know, like I travel with you. I don't know everything. You know, I've traveled 13 of the last 14 seasons with the exception of the year we had the All-Canadian bubble. But Cam Talbot is amongst the best people that I've met in the game the last several years. I remember Brad Treliving calling me before he signed him in Calgary a number of years ago, and just, he's a great guy, and he's a super person, and he's a tremendous teammate. So that's going to help out. The other guy you got in goal, the Oilers had signed to be their organizational number three goalie a couple of years ago, so right with Forsberg. So I think Ottawa will be a pretty good team. I don't know if they'll be a playoff team, but I think they'll compete for the playoffs. I do think that players like, by all reports, DJ Smith. You know, we've kind of kept an eye, Brad Holland in particular, has kept an eye on Ottawa over the last couple of years. That's one of his teams, and Brad's now the assistant general manager, so I know we've had lots of... I want to see Ottawa be successful. Like, in a perfect world, all seven Canadian teams make the playoffs. I'd like nothing more to see Edmonton, Calgary, and Vancouver finish 1-2-3 in the Pacific. And, Winnipeg do their thing in the Central, and then obviously the Maple Leafs, Ottawa, and Montreal have some success. Clearly, Montreal's in a bit of a rebuild. Pierre's got a good history in drafting players, so I could... What are they at cap-wise, by the way? Are they around $72 million bucks right now?
Yeah, they got about $10 million in space.
I don't know how much more above that they want to go. So I do have a right-shot option for Ottawa that I think is going to get moved, and that's Ethan Bear. Would not surprise me if the Carolina Hurricanes ended up trading him. You know, they got Burns. They have Pesci. They got Chatfield. I'm missing somebody else. Oh, they got the guy Coughlin. So, you know, they've got five right-shot defensemen. I wonder whether or not Bear ends up in play here at some point. And Ottawa and Carolina have made some deals, have they not, over the last 3 or 4 years?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, interesting. We'll keep an eye on that.
Edmonton Elks, what's the mood like there? Because Ottawa's going to play. They've got a bye this week, the Red Blacks, but then it's home and home with the Elks. Ottawa's lost 18 of 19 at home. The Elks have lost 11 straight at home. They just got blown out by the BC Lions. What's the mood like in Edmonton about the Elks?
You know, and you know, both you guys know this because of things like there's 7 or 8 fantasy football books out there right now, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to pick up, you know, I don't know if Streets and Smith is discontinued. I think Athlon Sports still has NFL and NCAA previews. Like, the CFL's got a challenge, and you talk about interest in the World Juniors. Like, I'm pulling off the doubleheader on Saturday. I'm going to the Canada-Czechia game, and then I'm also going to the Elks game against the Riders. I'm surprised, frankly, that Chris Jones hasn't found better players on defense. My belief is you experience you can upgrade your team quicker on defense and special teams than offense because you need to develop quarterbacks, and I don't think the Elks have one right now. So, you know, I think there's a little bit disappointment they're in the position that they're in. And the problem for the Elks is they're in the wrong division, because if they're in the East, they would be fine.
I'm not sure they would be fine. That's a bad team. There's a lot of teams here that aren't very good in the East. We'll find out in the next couple weeks.
Sure.
We'll find out in the next couple of weeks. SEC football, I know you're passionate about it. Is this the year? I mean, Georgia broke through last year. Can Texas A&M break through with Jimbo Fisher and a pretty spicy relationship with Nick Saban?
Well, you know, if your listeners have heard me before, they know that I'm an Alabama guy and you're an Auburn guy, though I love Bo Jackson, AJ, you know that. I would say, look, Alabama and Ohio State are two programs that are kind of on their own level. You know, LSU stepped up, and you could say they smacked Alabama in the mouth They won 46-41. Like, it wasn't, you know, they killed everybody else they played that year. I mean, Alabama's basically running a pro program. That's all there is to it. Texas A&M's trying to get there. My money is still on sort of the, you know, the intrinsics of, you know, the program that Alabama has that fosters, for whatever reason, they get their guys committed, and for the most part, they stay out of trouble. At least we don't hear about it when they're at Alabama. Georgia's going to take a step back. I mean, they had significant offseason losses. In fact, they lost their best wide receiver to Alabama in the transfer portal. Alabama's going to be good. This is how good Alabama is. AJ, I'm in a fantasy. I've been in the same fantasy football league since 1995. All my skill players are Alabama graduates. I don't care if I win. I just want to have all Alabama guys on the team. So they'll be good. It's a special program. People care about NCAA college football. There's a huge paradigm shift with, you know, the Pac-12 teams, USC and UCLA moving, or USC moving. All hell's breaking loose on the TV front. You got, you know, teams in the Big Ten that are going to make $100 million a year on the new SEC package. It's unbelievable, the money that's being tossed around. The NHL dreams. I mean, in Canada, we have the interest. But the Southeast, as you know, AJ, because you've traveled through there, the NHL dreams of having that passion and commitment level that NCAA football has in the States.
Bob, always a pleasure on so many different fronts. Appreciate you staying long for us, and enjoy that Edmonton summer. I'll be out there in a few weeks.
Well, we'll let you know, Province. Thanks for the warning.
Thanks, Bob.